This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han, with the top business stories of the day. We look, of course, to France and the Macron victory. You also look at Warren Buffett and China.
Yeah, so we got to start with the outcome from the French presidential election, obviously. Real quick, the headline figure. Well, I mean, Macron has won, in case you're just waking up and tuning in right now. Emmanuel Macron has won, and he got approximately 65% of the vote compared to Marine Le Pen's 35%. And so this result solidifies now what we have seen in the markets. The markets in the lead up to Sunday's vote have been pricing in a Macron victory.
You know, along with all the politics has also been pollsters and their reputation. You know, a lot of people have
said
pollsters have got it wrong over and over again. They're not capturing all the sentiment on the ground, and therefore they could be wrong this time around. They were apparently wrong around Brexit, but that was a really close call. They were apparently wrong around the Trump victory. But this time, they've kind of redeemed themselves, haven't they? Analysts and the polls have got it right.
Well, I wonder if it's the pollsters who are redeeming themselves or the voters, though, because if you recall, one of the criticisms during the Brexit referendum was that, you know, many of the younger generation thought, oh, it's never going to happen, so they're going to abstain, you know, from actually going out to vote. And hence, you saw it, you know, Brexit happening, right? Well, in this case, there was a lot of talk about how perhaps a lot of that 65% that Macron got was actually votes to make sure that Le Pen doesn't really get it. So it's a vote in the negative, per se. It wasn't for Macron, per se, but it's just so that Le Pen stays at bay.
Well, okay. That being as it may, the elections all over the world, why should we care about the French elections?
All right, certainly. So when you look at the EU, you know, they were our third largest trading partner in 2016. In the first quarter of this year, the EU was the fourth largest trading partner. You know, we have seen the US actually take third place, you know, as of the first 3 months of this year, right? So you know, that's why we care also. But also, you know, those, I guess, you know, you can boil down to those who are planning trips, you know, to the EU, you know, for your vacations. You will take note that the euro has jumped to a 6-month high against the US dollar. So perhaps your vacation or planned vacations to Europe might just have gotten a little bit more expensive.
So you're going to tighten your belt going, so not as many baguettes as you plan to buy.
But nevertheless, you know, we have to see, you know, how global markets will react, well, especially in Europe when they open later today, right? Because in the lead up to Sunday's vote, you had, the French CAC index, you know, that rallied. It surpassed a 9-year high on Thursday. You've also got Germany's DAX, so that broke through this all-time ceiling following Macron's success in the first round a couple of weeks ago. So you have those kind of movements. Whether that is sustained moving forward, that'd be a big question mark. That's in equities. We've got to look at currencies as well. But I think also moving forward, though, we have to look at, you know, what this means, you know, for the French population, because just as we saw the criticisms with Trump after he won that, he got into the White House, then it's now all about policy traction, and we have seen how that Trump trade has really lost a lot of his steam, right? So I think, you know, here with the challenges that Macron faces with the French economy, with its unemployment rate at about over 20%. Over 20% for youth, but about 10% unemployment rate for France as a whole, whether his policies can get the kind of traction that it desperately needs.
You know, going into this election, both candidates, Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron, had exactly 3 seats in an over 500-seat assembly. So the next stage for Macron is winning support in parliament, with the parliamentary elections coming up, in order to do exactly what you say, in order to push his policy agenda.
Right, and I think that those votes are coming up starting June 11th, I believe, right? So yeah, you have that going on. So, you know, it's not to say, well, on one hand, while this is a major, major form of uncertainty that is, you know, that markets have now crossed over and that's now removed from investor sentiment. But nevertheless, there is still, you know, some risk coming out of the European story, be it the June elections, you know, and also, you know, what the ECB, the European Central Bank, what they'll do, you know, moving forward, because we have seen a lot of rhetoric from central banks around the world, including here in Malaysia. Bret Negara talking about how one of the downside risks to Malaysia's economy is, you know, the potential for more geopolitical concerns, you know, brewing in Europe.
Okay, what's next for not just Macron, but for Warren Buffett and Charles Munger?
All right, so over the weekend, this is a bit of a fun one. So over the weekend, Berkshire Hathaway had their annual meeting over there in Omaha, Nebraska. And so, you know, this is a highly anticipated, you know, investors, shareholders meeting that many, many, many business news outlets are covering and dedicating a lot of airtime and real estate to. You know, so you're getting all these investing gems and all these nuggets of wisdom. You know, and, oh, I mean, Warren Buffett, he is, after all, the only the fourth richest man in the world with
and nothing speaks louder than success.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and with a net worth of just about $75 billion, you know, I mean, heck, if I can emulate, you know, even 1/1000th of what he, you know, he has, I'm good to go, right? I'll be happy. But I
See,
think
that shows your lack of ambition, actually.
Thanks a lot, buddy. Well.
Well, coming back to Warren Buffett, apparently
we're in the same boat here, buddy. You know, look at the one.
Okay. So a bit of a mea culpa from both Warren Buffett and Charles Munger about you know, things that they missed.
Yeah, so essentially, you know, when you look at how the likes of well, Buffett and Munger, you know, have gone about amassing their wealth, or obviously mainly Buffett, you know, you have seen how they tend to stick towards the more traditional industries. You know, they are very notable you know, holdings in the likes of Coke, you know, airlines, you know, etc. So you have seen them those kind of investments obviously being very successful for them. However, one of the key takeaways from this past weekend was how they were willing to admit, you know, despite, and this is coming from the fourth richest man in the world, right? He was willing to admit some of his shortcomings. But in this clip, we've got Charlie Munger, who's the vice chairman, 93 years old, you know, talking about how they may have had some missed opportunities.
Well, we avoided the tech stocks because we felt we had no advantage there, and other people did. And I think that's a good idea, not to play where the other people are better. But, you know, if you ask me in retrospect what was our worst mistake in the tech field, I think we were smart enough to figure out Google. Those ads worked so much better in the early days than anything else. So I would say that we failed you there. And we were smart enough to do it and didn't do it. We do that all the time, too.
That was the 93-year-old vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway there, Charlie Munger, you know, again, saying that, you know, he admitting that he has failed the shareholders of Berkshire Hathaway, you know, in terms of not seizing that opportunity with Google.
I mean, it's quite amazing. This meeting itself had, what, 40,000 people
That's
attending
right.
it?
Yeah, 40,000.
It was like a stadium.
Yeah, well, it was pretty much like a big, well, a Woodstock of sorts, except they are all shareholders of Berkshire Hathaway there. No, but I think, you know, it's, you know, having that sense. I mean, that's why they call him like the billionaire next door, right, Warren Buffett. You know, having that sense of, you know, closeness and accessibility to him, and having him spend over 5 hours just answering those questions. And also along the way, it's like we just heard, you know, admitting, you know, that, hey, you know, they have made some mistakes along the way of amassing those, well, I mean, that $75 billion in wealth. But then if you look at, say, recent news as well over the last, I think last week, you know, you had Warren Buffett also talking about how he has revalued IBM downwards, and he has sold about 1/3 of Berkshire Hathaway's stake in IBM Corp. Now, I mean, he's saying that, yeah, IBM, you know, is strong, but, you know, IBM has strong competitors as well. No, I mean, that perhaps signaling the rationale for the, you know, the paring down of his stake in IBM. So, you know, he is still trying, obviously still making making a lot of money, fourth richest man in the world. But, you know, it's somewhat comforting to know that, hey, you know, even the some of the richest and the most successful are prone to mistakes as well. I feel a little bit more human now.
Okay, we'll be back with more analysis of the top business stories of the day, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.